welcome to another episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. I'm your host, Tyler. This will actually be a short solo pod tonight. Matt is off celebrating his dad's birthday, so a happy birthday to him. But with that, I'm left to do the pod myself. So it is currently late Thursday night. The second round of the A-10 tournament has just wrapped up, and we are all getting ourselves excited for the quarterfinals, as we are now less than 24 hours away from all of the double bye teams playing in their first postseason game. So for those who missed today's second round games, Rhode Island beat LaSalle, George Mason beat George Washington, St. Joe's took down Duquesne in a shootout, and St. Louis pulled away late against Richmond. I was going to try to name an MVP for the day, but it's really a difficult thing to do. Each game saw an all-conference performer really step up. Cyril Langevin, 25 points and 12 rebounds in limited minutes for Rhode Island, as he didn't play much late in the game in a blowout. Justin Kyer, 26 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists for a triple nickel for George Mason. Charlie Brown had 28 points and 8 rebounds for St. Joe's. And Hassan French, 22 points, 12 rebounds, critical on the glass for SLU. If I really had to pick one, I guess I would say Justin Kyer. Quite frankly, the rest of George Mason's team just did not play well. That's why they only beat GW by 4. The rest of the team left Kyer without much help until the final minutes when Otis Livingston and Javon Green both really stepped up and took some of the load off of his shoulders. But we saw the Justin Kyer that we saw in early January, a guy who was the early favorite for player of the year, only to see him tail off a little bit late in the season. He was the guy when George Mason was really picking up a lot of momentum when we were talking about them as a potential dark horse to win the A-10. And as he's faded, so did George Mason. So if this turnaround is real, if he does this again against St. Bonaventure tomorrow, then we may have to reevaluate what we had been thinking about the Patriots. The Duquesne-St. Joe's game, a big shootout. Charlie Brown really emerging as the star in a night that saw great performances also by Eric Williams and Lamar Norman. Apparently, if you have a junior in your name, then it qualified you to be one of the stars of this game. But everybody's favorite Peanuts character turned St. Joe's Hawk had what I believe was honestly his best game of the season. This is a guy who doesn't always hit the glass hard. He did it tonight. He made unselfish plays. He wasn't afraid going to the foul line late in the game. And these are just the small things that you don't always see from Charlie Brown. And the big things, the athleticism and the shot making, of course were there. They always are. He was super impressive tonight. Eric Williams putting up 23 points, 9 rebounds, and a loss, probably the most impressive guy who lost today. But Duquesne just got absolutely no help on the defensive end. The thing I was most impressed by today, just St. Louis on the offensive glass. And it's not a surprising thing, but the Billikens pulled in 18 of a possible 34 offensive rebounds in this game, which is really impressive against a Richmond front line that has Grant Golden and Nathan Kao. This continues to be SLU's best weapon. It may be more of a challenge tomorrow against the big bodies of Dayton, but we'll get to that later. Thing I was least impressed by, Duquesne's defense was just simply atrocious. I honestly can't think of a better word for it. But to give up 92 points to a 10th-seeded St. Joe's team, I understand they have some great offensive players, and of course Charlie Brown is a star in this league, but you can't be putting up 86 points against a team that didn't even finish in the top half of the conference and then lose the game. Duquesne's offense was great all night. They weren't turning the ball over a ton, at least not in the second half, so you can't point the points off turnovers to blame. One of the big issues for the Dukes, they didn't have Amari Kelly or Austin Rotrov, both out for the season with injuries. And when Michael Hughes wasn't on the floor, they kind of sold out to cover the paint, left guys hanging around on the weak side, and St. Joe's did a great job of exploiting that, throwing cross-court passes and getting open threes. Phil Martelli really had one of the best coaching performances he's had all year. He's been up and down this season, but today he looked like the Phil Martelli who has led so many great St. Joe's teams in the past. It was an impressive coaching performance, and if he can do it again tomorrow, they got a great shot against Davidson. So moving into a preview of today's quarterfinal games, it's very interesting. All four of these matchups feature teams that played each other twice during the year, and all four series were split 1-1. So we have a quartet of third-game rubber matches coming up. The early game at noon, the top-seeded conference champion VCU Rams facing the 8-seeded Rhode Island Rams. Rhodey won the first matchup 71-65 at home, VCU crushing them at home later in the season 76-42. The story of the first game was probably the worst offensive performance from the VCU role players the entire season. They got just 19 points from guys not named either Santos Silva, Evans, or Jenkins. They did not get a three-pointer made by anyone besides Marcus Evans. And Rhodey managed to pull out the game despite the fact that Cyril Langevin was in foul trouble the whole day. Fats Russell had one of his better games of the season up until these final few weeks. And then in the second game, everything just clicked for VCU defensively. They actually didn't play any of their starters more than 24 minutes in that game. And that was really the moment that we realized this VCU team is truly special. Now, looking ahead to tomorrow, the key, as always, is going to be to continue to corral Cyril Langevin. He's had trouble guarding Marcus Santos Silva this year, as evidenced by the fact that he fouled out in the first matchup and had four fouls in the second. He's got to keep himself on the court, because as we've seen, unless Fats Russell has another crazy 35-point game in him, which no one has been able to do against the VCU defense this year, then Langevin playing less than 30 minutes again, that's going to make it impossible for Rhodey to win this game. So Langevin's got to stay on the court, maybe bring some help over from a guy like a Jermaine Harris or Dana Tate. Dropping down to double on Santos Silva could help. But it's a tough hill to climb for Rhodey. VCU hasn't lost since that game at Rhode Island back in January. And unless VCU comes out just not completely focused, this is their game to lose. The big X factor for this, I would really just say anyone outside of Rhodey's big three. We know what Langevin can do. Fats Russell, we know that he could do something great or something terrible. And I think it would honestly be a cop-out to call him the X Factor. Quite frankly, if he doesn't play well, Rhodey probably doesn't have a chance. And at this point, we pretty much know what Jeff Doughton's got to do. So who's the guy out of the Harris, Martin, Tate, Thompson group for Rhodey that's going to step up? In the game that they won, it was Tyrese Martin, 12 points, 7 rebounds, one of his best games of the season. Rhodey's going to have to find that guy to emerge from the pack to be able to win this game, because the normal contributions from their big three just aren't going to be enough. For VCU, I think the biggest X factor is just the fire that this team has. It's pretty certain that they're going to be going to the NCAA tournament. Do they think that maybe they can just roll out and just crush Rhode Island like they did last time? Or are they going to be looking ahead to Bonaventure or Mason on Saturday? If VCU comes out with a fire, we're going to know within the first 10 minutes. And if they do, then really I have a hard time seeing them losing this game. Unless something happens where it's just the brick fest that it was the first time in Rhode Island, where they're just not making any of their threes. Deriante Jenkins was cold in that game. Santos Silva was in foul trouble. Really, I don't see the universe where Rhode Island wins this game short of an just downright all-star performance from either Langevin or Russell, or if VCU just comes out flat. This is a different VCU team than the one that lost to Rhodey in January, and I'm pretty confident in them tomorrow. The second game, coming 2 hours after the conclusion of that one, the 4th seed St. Bonaventure taking on the 5th seed George Mason. The first game won by Mason back in January at home 68-53 on the opening weekend of conference play. In fact, back then, St. Bonaventure was actually 4-10 on the year. Seems unthinkable now, but that's what happened. Bonaventure got great games from Lofton and Stockard that night, got almost nothing else from the rest of their guys, a combined 17 points from the role players in that one. George Mason at that point was riding the hot streak of Justin Kyer. He had 15 points, 14 rebounds. And that was one of the games, along with opening night against St. Joe's, that really launched him into the early season player of the year discussion. Second game, Bonaventure crushed them in Olean 79-56. This was one of the games that really started Mason's late season slide. They got 21 from Kyer that night, but only 10 from Livingston, just 2 points from Javon Green. Bonaventure got an incredible 32-point performance from Kyle Lofton, probably his best game of the year. Another 17 from Stockard, Ashunahi with 11 boards. And one thing to point out, the first game that they played in conference season this year, Ashunahi only played 17 minutes. He was actually coming off the bench at that point. They still had Akpeezy starting. So not the same St. Bonaventure team that we're seeing now. So my X factors in this game, for Bonaventure, I got to go with Kyle Lofton, even though he's one of their best players and had a great performance last time against the Patriots. But we've seen mounting evidence over the past few weeks that Mason does not do great against smaller, quicker guards. Lofton proving that, Tavian Dunn-Martin proving that. Actually, they kind of refuted that earlier today by shutting down Terry Nolan on GW. But if Lofton can have a great game and really control the pace and be the leader that Bonaventure needs him to be in his first ever postseason game, then they're in pretty great shape. For Mason, the big X factor is going to be Jared Reuter. He's going up against one of the premier defensive centers in the league, in Ashunahi. And it has not gone well so far for Reuter in games against the Bonnies. He put up 8 points the first time around when Ashunahi really didn't play that much, and then went 0-for-4 in the second game. It's really not a fluke, obviously, Ashunahi being one of the best post defenders in the league. But Reuter is going to have to establish himself as an offensive threat early on, because he's really going to struggle against Ashunahi's size and power on the other end. And if he's not going to be an offensive factor in this game, then we're probably going to have to see some more A.J. Wilson or Greg Kalicz down low. And we kept hearing throughout the broadcast in today's game how important Reuter is to to George Mason's offense, and they want to be able to establish him in the post to open everything else up. Well, I want to see if he can get a few quick buckets in the early going of this game, because if he struggles the way he did last time against the Bonnies, then they're probably just going to have to take him out of the game and opt for a more defensive center. As for a prediction, Mason played great today. Namely, Justin Kyer played great today, and Mason played great in the last 4 minutes. I'm not really concerned by the fact that they didn't blow the Colonials out. They're not going to play as badly as they did in the first 35 minutes today, again tomorrow. But I see Kyer having a huge game again, something along the lines of 25-8. I still don't think that that's going to be enough. I like the Bonnies in a close one. The third game of the night, the 2-seed Davidson against the only upset team of the day, the 10th-seed St. Joe's. St. Joe's narrowly pulled out a 61-60 win at home early in the season. And then on Steph Curry's return night, Davidson beat them 80-72. The stories of those games, poor shooting for Davidson killed them in the first one. 2-for-7 from 3 from John Axel, 1-for-6 from 3 from Kellen Grady. St. Joe's actually didn't even get a great Charlie Brown performance that night. He only had 11 points, which is surprising when you realize that the Hawks ended up winning that game. Their best player was actually Chris Clover, who had 18 that night. In the second game, Charlie Brown was awesome, 20 points, 8 rebounds. But he was in foul trouble throughout. Clover had 17-10 that night, but John Axel was unstoppable with 21. This was the best game of Keyshawn Pritchett's season with 18 points, Luke Frampton threw in at 18. And the names that really stand out looking at these two box scores, Luke Frampton had two really good games against the Hawks. And then on the other side, Chris Clover had two really good games against Davidson. So those are two guys to really watch out for. For me, the X factor for Davidson is Keyshawn Pritchett just because of what he's going to have to do on the defensive end. The Wildcats really do not have an ideal Charlie Brown defender. And granted, very few teams in the A-10 do. That's the problem of playing a four-guard lineup. They really don't have a guy big enough to take on Charlie Brown. Obviously, Brajkovic is just too slow, and he's going to be toiling with St. Joe's centers. So my X factor for Davidson, can Pritchett hold him to under 20 points on the defensive end? And then when Pritchett's not on the court because he's not going to play as many minutes as Brown, who gets that assignment? Do you go with Luke Frampton? Do you pull in a bigger backup like a Bates Jones and give him the assignment? Maybe Carter Collins? Or do you just trust in John Axel, who might be your best wing defender, even though he's going to be undersized, and hope that he can just be an irritant and keep Brown from dribbling? But it's going to be a big Pritchett. Pritchett's going to have to be big. For St. Joe's, it's really the same X factor as always. Taylor Funk has had a wildly inconsistent season. He's been a defensive minus for most of the year, but tonight he really showed something on the defensive end against both Michael Hughes and Marcus Weathers. The NBCSN announcers just kept raving about his plus-minus. I don't know what he finished out at, but it was in the plus-20s. He really gave St. Joe's something on the defensive end that we haven't seen from him all year. If he can do that again, having to chase the shooters of Davidson around, probably will end up matched up against Luke Frampton if he's on the court. Of course, they might throw him on Brajkovic in the event that he has to play a little bit of center, but he's going to have to go both inside and out on defense. And really, those defensive matchups are going to either win or lose the game for both of these teams. St. Joe's, with the size advantage on the wing with Clover and Brown, can they overpower Davidson's smaller wings? On the flip side, are guys like Taylor Funk and Lorenzo Edwards going to be able to chase around Davidson's shooters? And that's going to be the story of the game. We got two really good veteran coaches in Bob McKillop and Phil Martelli who are going to try to outsmart each other. And if Davidson's shooting is the way it normally is, then they're just going to have to seal up St. Joe's on the defensive end. This was a game I actually had picked Duquesne to pull the upset here just because I wanted an upset pick. If you haven't figured it out yet, I'm heading towards chalk with these predictions. I just don't love any of these matchups for the underdogs, so I'm going to take Davidson in this one, but I think Charlie Brown's just going to have a spectacular night. And then the final game of the night, the best rivalry in college basketball, featuring a guy with a number one jersey, a freshman who loves to give us highlight dunks. I'm not talking about Duke and North Carolina. I'm obviously talking about the Great Arch Barron Cup. The 3-seed Dayton, the 6-seed St. Louis, about a half hour after the conclusion of the Davidson game. Pelicans won the first matchup 73-60 at home. Dayton won the second matchup 70-62 at UD Arena. The story of the first game was just St. Louis crushing them on the offensive boards early on. They ended up pulling in 19 offensive rebounds, a stat that actually is a little bit distorted because Dayton rebounded the ball really well at the end of the game. The second game, it's just Dayton really out-talenting the Billikens in the second half. Tremaine Isabel was awesome with 23 points, but St. Louis really couldn't get anything from anyone else. It was Javon Bess's worst offensive game of the year by far, 2-for-13 from the field. Jalen Crutcher, absolutely sensational with 17 points that night. Obi Toppin had a double-double, wasn't scoring much. And the big X factor for Dayton tomorrow is going to be, can they hold SLU off the offensive boards the way they did in the second matchup? They only gave up 9 in that one, got 25 defensive boards. Really the best boxing out performance we've seen from any team against SLU down the stretch. And they really are well-equipped to be able to beat the Billikens at that game. When you have Josh Cunningham, Obi Toppin, Ryan Mixel, and Trey Landers on your team, and at the very least, two, most likely three of those guys are going to be on the court at all times, you shouldn't be giving up double-digit offensive rebounds. This is the kind of game that is perfectly set up for Josh Cunningham. He can go down low and scrap for rebounds. He's going to be critical trying to keep Hassan French off the offensive glass. And then on the other end, he occupies French and forces Slew to have to guard Obi Toppin with either DJ Foreman, who's just a little bit too slow for him, or with one of their much smaller wing guys that he can just simply bully in the post. For Slew, a lot of the year the X-Factor has been DJ Foreman, just given that he's been struggling against opposing power forwards, but he has really solved that problem in recent weeks. Did really well against Marcus Weathers last week, did well against Nathan Kao today. So for me, the X-Factor is Tremaine Isabel. Dayton has really shored up their defense in the last few weeks. They aren't nearly as susceptible to giving up open threes to roll guys as they were. But if this team starts to go back to some of their nasty habits where they're kind of aggressively semi-trapping on ball handlers, then that's going to leave Tremaine Isabel open. He's really the only reliable three-point shooter that Slew has. Bess and Fred Thatch can be that on given nights, but both just too inconsistent from deep. Isabel has really come along in these last few weeks as he winds down towards the end of his career. If he gets at least 20 points, then I really do see the Billikens winning this one. As for Dayton, offensively, the key is going to be just trying to outspeed the Billikens. They're going to have a speed advantage with no matter who is guarding Toppin, whether it's French or Foreman. And if they don't, it means that a smaller guy's on him and they have a huge size advantage. So are they going to try to drag DJ Foreman out of the paint? Are they going to use Obi as the lethal pick and roll dive guy that he is? Are they going to give him the ball and really let him kind of run the offense, something that they've been more willing to do late in the season and has worked really well because he is a terrific perimeter passer? That's going to be the big question for me. Can they take advantage of that speed advantage that either Toppin or Mixel is going to have on whatever big guy is guarding them? I like the Flyers. They're my pick to win the tournament. I see them gutting this game out. And so with that, that is our quarterfinal preview. Thank you again for listening to the 3-Bid League podcast. Please, if you have any questions that you want us to answer on the pods that are going to be coming up either tomorrow night, Saturday night, or Sunday night after these games, please just send them to us on Twitter at the number 3-Bid League Pod. And thanks again for listening.